This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Tech Talk. We're going to be talking numbers today, a little bit anyway. But I'll also be speaking with a couple of people. I've got people from Facebook, and I've got people from Bain & Company on the phone with me. Nicole Tan, who's the country director at Facebook Malaysia. Say hello, Nicole.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. And I've got Gwendolyn Lim, a partner over at Bain & Company. Say hello, Gwendolyn.
Hi, everybody.
Okay, so you guys together launched a report that provides insights into Southeast Asia's digital boom and the future of e-commerce in the region. It's called Sync Southeast Asia. This is the third time you've done this annual report based on a survey of 16,700 digital consumers and gathered from interviews with over 20 CXOs across six Southeast Asian countries: Malaysia, Singapore, the Philippines, Indonesia, Thailand, and Vietnam. Now, we do know that digitalization has been the buzzword from the beginning of the pandemic, with Malaysia, according to this report, leading the charge in this region. Do you think we might have been in this position in Malaysia if it weren't for the pandemic? And were numbers kind of indicative or not of that?
Yes, and we definitely see, as you had said, that Malaysia has the highest ratio of digital consumers in Southeast Asia at a whopping 88% versus the Southeast Asia of 78%. So this is really wonderful news from Malaysia, as we think that that means that consumers are accessing things that are a wider range, more categories online, and all leading to this higher digital retail penetration. We do think a lot of this could be driven by assimilating the work from home lifestyles as a result of the MCOs in the past year. And what is very, very interesting that we see is that digital shopping has actually shot up for groceries, personal care, athleisure wear, and everything in between. So last number I want to have for you is that 47% more Malaysian consumers switched to online as their most used channel across all product categories. 47%. And they're actually purchasing 50% more online categories compared to 2020. So you can imagine, yes, we do think that this behavior is here to stay.
I've definitely purchased an awful lot on more online over the past few months. I can say that. My wallet has been saying that. My bank account has been saying that. Now, obviously, I want to talk a little bit about data collection and advertisements. Has it helped Facebook with the surge of people online, Nicole?
Sure. So, you know, every day people come to Facebook and Instagram to discover all kinds of different things, right? So you use Facebook, Instagram to discover fun things and also meaningful and life-changing things. We use Facebook and Instagram to connect with our communities, to nonprofits, to groups that we're interested in. So Facebook does not collect your personal data for ads targeting. What we do is we provide advertisers with reports about the kinds of people seeing their ads and how your ads are performing, but we don't share information that personally identifies you. So you can always see the interest that's assigned to you in your ad preferences, and you also have the choice to remove them if you so choose. So personalized ads are good for small businesses, and they're good for the people that love your products. And here's why. First thing is that it's an important way for people to discover small businesses on Facebook and Instagram. And it does help small businesses grow from an idea. You know, if you have a small cake shop, it could be that your next thing is you could be, you know, the next king of cakes in Malaysia. And so it turns an idea into a livelihood. And advertising is therefore made affordable for small business owners, and they have access to a global customer audience. I think coming back to the study, what's interesting in this Sync study is what Gwen has briefly mentioned about the number of digital consumers that have come. Social media plays a big role in that consumer purchase journey, whether it is from discovery, so finding new things, or to influence the brand consideration to decide what those things are. And of course, the other aspect is social commerce is definitely gaining popularity.
That's something I want to talk to you about later on. Hold on to that thought for a moment. Before we do that, though, you know, as consumers, are they buying through Facebook, or are they mainly using Facebook as a kind of marketing or a discovery platform, do you think, Nicole?
So as I mentioned earlier, people come for many different reasons. And I'm sure you've seen that but, you know, in your behavior as well. So it could be from a consumer point of view, you could be coming to stay up to date by following pages of brands that you love. You could be looking for inspiration. People come to Instagram to look for fashion. That's an example. Or you could be connecting with communities or connecting with groups. I'm a new mom, and I can tell you that, you know, mom groups and pre-love groups have been really instrumental for me over the last few months. Or it could be just simply staying in touch with family and friends. And similarly, when you think about brands, they use Facebook and the family of apps, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, Messenger, for many different reasons. It could be for things like what you mentioned, brand loyalty building, but also people are using it to help give inspiration and customer service, to connect with their customers and use messaging to complete a purchase. So it's quite difficult to kind of say that it's one or the other. They're just different reasons that people are using the platform for.
Right. Gwen, I want to move over to you now. And this is kind of, it's a fairly broad question. But looking at the facts and the figures that you've had for these people that you've polled and you've spoken to over the last few months, how can we predict what you think might happen over the next few months? How do you think consumer behavior might change ever so slightly, especially if we're seeing the kind of the lightening of the MCOs and people moving around a little bit more? Do you expect some kind of change?
Well, I would think that we actually see that many of these, what we now call new consumer patterns online, though they've been developing now over the last 2 years, we actually think it will transcend the pandemic as the pandemic becomes endemic going forward. So really permanent shift in behaviors. And the reason for that is, I think, again, even though in the beginning people may have shifted online due to COVID-19 MCO restrictions, however, what people have done really well is to really show these new online shoppers about the value and, more importantly, the convenience of shopping online. And because of that, and because of this increased spending and people are happy with the experience, we do think that they will continue to rely on e-commerce, even in an endemic situation, especially across categories such as groceries, personal care, baby care that, you know, Nicole was mentioning. So no, this is not a fleeting trend that will go away and we revert back to what it was before COVID-19.
So you don't predict a dip in buying patterns for people via e-commerce?
No, definitely do not predict a dip in buying patterns. Again, some people may like omnichannel, so they may, you know, again, do some research online, go into the store to buy or vice versa. But definitely we do not expect to see a collapse in the online volumes.
Okay, this is a question for both of you then, I suppose. Did any of the results concerning consumers here in Southeast Asia surprise you? Was there anything out of the ordinary?
Yeah, so I think for me, what I saw that was really interesting was two things. One around social commerce and how much people are now using social media apps, social channels, influencers as point of sales. You know, in Southeast Asia, we saw around 80% of online consumers wanting to see positive user and influencer reviews before they went to go buy something. So I think this is a new trend that we may have seen starting in China first, but really seeing that imported now and very alive and well in Southeast Asia. That would be from my side.
Nicole?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. I think social commerce was definitely interesting. But the other thing that we saw out of the report, you know, social media continues to be a key driver both for discovery as well as influencing the brand consideration. We touched on how some of these behaviors are going to remain. And I want to point out as well that we've started seeing this trend almost as early as 2020. But I think the pandemic accelerated some of these trends. What is surprising for me was the focus on environmental ESG, sustainability and governance. That came out a little higher than, you know, what people know. So, for example, we talked about 87% people are looking at ESG as one of the reasons why they would consider switching, as well as 10%, they would be willing to pay a premium of up to 10%. So I think that was something that was interesting. We've not included that in the report before. And, you know, we know that that is of interest for a lot of brands and businesses to, as they plan out their strategies around ESG.
Wonderful. Let's take a short break here, ladies. I'm on the phone line with Nicole Tan. She is the country director over at Facebook Malaysia. And I've got Gwendolyn Lim. She is a partner at Bain & Company. We're taking a short break here on Tech Talk, but we are talking with Facebook and Bain & Company about the Sync Southeast Asia. It's a third iteration of the annual report based on a survey of 16,700 digital consumers and gathered insights from interviews with over 20 CXOs across six Southeast Asian countries. You're listening to Tech Talk here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Burning for more. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Tech Talk here on BFM. I'm on the phone with Nicole Tan. She's the country director over at Facebook Malaysia, and Gwendolyn Lim from Partner and Bain Company. She's a partner at Bain and Company. We're speaking about Sync Southeast Asia, a report based on a survey of 16,700 digital consumers and getting insights with over 20 CXOs across six Southeast Asian countries, including Malaysia, Singapore, the Philippines, Indonesia, Thailand, and Vietnam. According to the report, some key highlights: Malaysia is leading in the region with the highest percentage of digital consumers, 88% or 22 million people, and 90% of consumers will go digital by the end of 2021. We're speaking about how digitalization is the buzzword and a few other bits and pieces. We've had a couple of surprises here and there. Now, what I want to talk to you here is about Malaysia in general and what's different about the consumers here in Malaysia compared to the other nations that you polled. And I think probably, Gwen, you're probably best to answer this first off.
Yeah, so I think what we saw as being very different about Malaysia versus other countries is, one, we talked about it slightly earlier about how social media is actually the leading online discovery and evaluation. So that's actually 43% of the total purchases online, highest percentage in Southeast Asia. I think the other thing that we saw also is the kind of investments that are taking place into the online space, how a lot of it is actually 88% of the investment funds are flowing into the internet and technology space in the first quarter of 2021. So we think that means that the race for disruptors is on, and you really see that in Malaysia also. So that was one of the things that we saw was quite different in Malaysia versus some of the other countries that we had polled in.
Mm-hmm. And Nicole, is that similar for you?
I think the one thing I would highlight is the discovery generation that we see in Malaysia. So we talked about how, you know, Malaysia has undergone a paradigm shift. And when we look at the discovery to purchase, 63% of respondents in Malaysia said they don't know what they want and where to buy when they shop online.
That's what I was going to ask you. You know, can you define for me exactly what the discovery generation is? It's a new term.
Yeah, so the discovery generation are those who are open to discover new products, largely through online inspiration and influence. Think about, you know, without revealing my age, but in the teenage years of hanging out in a shopping mall, you're
window
browsing.
Window shoppers,
right? So
I see,
you don't
okay.
have a specific, yeah, window shoppers, you don't have a specific item. The difference is you are no longer both store times bound and geographical limitations bound, right? So you can discover new products across the world at any point in time. You can look for inspiration and influence, and your decision making is largely influenced by what you encounter upon what you see online. And in Malaysia, 63% of respondents have said to us they don't know what they want, where to buy. And that's an opportunity for small businesses and businesses of all sizes to be able to influence them and to be what consumers want to discover. The other thing that we see is that 79% of respondents cite, you know, online as where they're discovering and where they're researching before they're making that purchase. And some other interesting data is around how people are no longer just limiting to, so in the past, 4.8 different websites, they're now looking at more than 7 websites, for example. So that's where we see a lot more browsing and more discovery behavior.
Okay, so just for a second, and I'm not going to reveal my age either, that I am, quote unquote, you know, window shopping, or I'm part of this discovery generation. I can pretend to be. And, you know, it's and let's be honest, for most of us, it's scrolling through these websites at maybe 1 or 2 a.m. in the morning for whatever reason. If you were a small business and you wanted to be noticed by this discovery generation, what do you think would be the best way of kind of doing that? How would you get your company out there? How would you get noticed?
So with small businesses, we want to share how you can be discovered, how we can make sure that people are considering you, and of course, at the end of the day, how we convert that discovery into a purchase. Mm. So a couple of things that we've recommended for small businesses to do to make sure that they stand out, and some of these insights are in the CSINC study itself, is to really think about your full consumer engagement, or what we term as full funnel marketing, right? Mm-hmm. So to look at social, not just from one aspect of discovery or just one aspect of consideration, but to plan out a consumer engagement and a purchase journey, and to ensure that engagement journey is as friction-free, or is to make it as easy as possible. So for example, right. You can be a source of inspiration and you can share like, here are new ways to, for example, a nice piece of cake and you're sharing some inspiration around how you make that cake. That's interesting, that's creative. And then after that, make sure that you're able to show consideration, meaning, you know, you could be offering a promotion or a deal, mm-hmm, something that mm-hmm. makes that person say, hey, I've seen something very beautiful and interesting. I'm interested to engage with this small business. And then giving them the opportunity to purchase as soon as possible. So we call it friction-free shopping. And that could be through click to WhatsApp or click to Messenger on our platform. Or it could be through shops to make sure that you check out, so that when you discover something new, you have the opportunity to purchase and there is very little friction in that journey.
Wonderful. Looking at some of the numbers then, I mean, obviously we've been talking about it since the top of the show, you know, massive shift of people moving onto online. And I think in the last few months, I was talking about, baby products and healthcare products. These seem to be, you know, the big things that are right now in growth. What are the other sectors that we're seeing the most growth in? And what are the reasons that have been given for growth in these sectors, Gwen?
So traditionally, again, if you think pre-COVID time, some of the biggest categories that used to be shopped online was consumer electronics or clothing per se. You've seen some increase on those during these COVID times, but the big shifts that you have really seen is in personal care and beauty. I think for very obvious reasons, people wanted to keep themselves safe in a time of pandemic, and also grocery shopping. So grocery shopping, we've actually seen that increase by 4 times during COVID-19. And I think, you know, as someone who's worked with a lot of grocers in the past, they used to say, all the physical grocers used to say, hey, we're the last thing that will ever move. Don't worry about us. You know, people want to touch and feel their fruit before they buy it, right? Well, those days are gone, you know. As long as you've had a very good experience with what you ordered in from whichever provider, you're going to stick with it. So we think that grocery will actually will continue to have the highest online retail growth even in the next couple of years till 2026.
Right. That's interesting. But the one thing, the question that I want to wrap up with now, and we've mentioned it a few times here, is the idea of social commerce. And I did have a question lined up about whether or not social media is as influential as it was pre-pandemic, but clearly it is. And clearly social commerce is the thing that's helping to drive this. Started, I believe, over in China not too long ago. And it's obviously on the rise worldwide right now. Why is it that we're looking to these people now? Why is it on the rise? Explain to me a little bit.
It's interesting that you said it was on the rise in China. And what we see in our research is that actually social commerce is now even more popular in Southeast Asia. So, you know, I would say that in Southeast Asia, across all the different countries, conversational commerce or social commerce is almost on our, it's our own thing now, if
We own it now.
Put it that way. Yeah, we own it now. Southeast Asians own it now. So social commerce, just to make sure we have the definitions, it refers to buying and selling that takes place entirely on social media. And there are three main types of social commerce. So there's one sort of like the peer-to-peer sales platforms. These are community-based marketplaces. This could be, you know, for example, pre-loved baby items that you sell from one mom to another mom. The second one is conversational commerce. And generally, we see small businesses selling between small businesses and buyers on online platforms and usually via chat. And this could be, you know, ordering flowers on WhatsApp, on Messenger, or ordering like some food. We saw that happen across these few months, obviously, while we were all on MCO. And the third aspect is group buying, which is, you know, where there's a lower price and there's enough buyers within a group to buy that, to make that purchase. So the growth of social commerce has been really fueled by, you know, we saw this happen before the pandemic, but it was definitely accelerated during the pandemic. And it's coming from demand from consumers to have discovery and purchase on the same platform. Remember how I was mentioning that people want friction-free or easy as possible? So when somebody discovers something on Instagram, they want to be able to purchase that straight away, or they want to be able to talk to the seller right away. And so that's really driving conversational commerce, where you're not going to wait for, you know, time when you go to a store or, you know, for the shop to open. You kind of want to be able to talk to the seller immediately, find out a little more information, and then once you're happy with that, make that purchase. And this direct two-way communication via Messenger or WhatsApp is really helping to build trust and better customer service. And that's part of the reason why we see this wide adoption, especially in Southeast Asia during this time. We think that there will be growing relevance for social commerce. It's just going to accelerate because people love the convenience. People love the fact that they could talk to the sellers and to the small business. And as social commerce grows, we will expect to see, you know, better brand selections come on, more convenience come on, better payment methods. It's still fairly manual at this stage, as well as better customer service experience. So I think it's only going to get better.
Okay. I've got one final question just before I let you go. Gwen, and I think this is when I kind of want you to reach into your crystal ball and have a look forward for us. Next year, when we're coming here and we're talking about the fourth iteration of this annual report, other than seeing, you know, grocery purchases shoot through the roof, what other changes do you maybe expect to see in the report?
Yeah. What I hope to see in the report is that, you know, a lot of our omni-channel friends, our omni-channel retailers are starting to do better. I think for the past 3 years, we've been telling people, again, people who started off in the physical network, we said, you have to go omni. You have to rethink about your customer experience. You have to rethink about, you know, how you're doing your digital platform. What is your digital plan? And I think for the last 3 years, we've seen some improvement, but not in a market fashion, not in a huge market fashion. So what I would love to see coming back next year would be that finally the omni-channel retailers start to roar in Malaysia, the rest of Southeast Asia, and make life more interesting for the competitors like your Shopee's, Lazada's of the world. And I would like to see a little bit more competition in that area. So that's what I'm hoping to see next year.
Wonderful. Nicole and Gwendolyn, thank you very much for spending your time with me this afternoon.
Thank you, Richard, for having us.
Absolute pleasure. I've been on the phone with Nicole Tan. She is the country director over at Facebook Malaysia, and Gwendolyn Lim, a partner at Bain & Company. We've been speaking about Sync Southeast Asia, the third iteration of the annual report. If you missed any part of the show, don't forget you can download the podcast wherever you normally listen to it from. I recommend the BFM app. It's available in the Apple App Store or Google Play. For BFM 89.9, I'm Rich Bradbury.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.